What's good, podcast world? Welcome back to Balls Deep. This is episode 16. I'm your co-host, Zach Wunderlich, as always joined by co-hosts Chance Rich and David Burgess. We got Chance Rich back with us this week. Chance, all right, brother?
Doing well, brother. Just got done cleaning off some baby throw-up off my shirt, but I'm doing well now.
You hate to see it. I got our other co-host here this week, David Burgess. David, how are you, man?
I'm good, boss. Really enjoying not having to clean up baby throw up in my life right now. So,
yeah, I hear you. It's a pain in the ass, but it's worth it all in the end. fellas, exciting episode here.
Yes, sir.
Grateful as hell that he came back with us. That is Jimmy the Brick Flick. Jimmy, how are you, brother?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. Doing good. I appreciate y'all having me.
Absolutely, always, man. We appreciate you coming on. And first off, we'll start with congratulations on the retirement. Fuck, I wish I could retire right now.
I appreciate it.
Lost you there for a second.
I was fighting. I didn't retire from working yet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you there. But anytime you get to say that you retired from something at a young age, you did something right.
Yes, sir.
So, if we let's get into the first topic here, because like I told you before we started this, you know, we kind of have a core group of listeners that listen to us every week, and you know, we told them that we got the Brick coming back on with us, and after we had you on the first time, then he retired. You know, I got some texts like, "Hey, man, why'd Jimmy retire?" And I'm like, "Well, man, I don't know. He was on our podcast, but you know, that's a question for him." So, you know, if you could kind of walk us through the decision making and, you know, how you ultimately decided to retire from the UFC.
Well, it was hard, and it kind of hit me out of nowhere. I've thought about it here and there in the past, and that's usually when you're coming off of a loss. You know, you come off a loss and stuff, and you're like, man, am I going to keep doing this? And but I was on a 4-fight win streak. I just made it to the UFC, got a $50,000 bonus, and then they granted me the wish to fight the champion's brother, you know. So, like, I was excited, or I thought I was excited. That's the problem now. I was losing the urge to train, and as I was trying to train and, you know, keep the grind going, I had an encounter with my father, and me and my father started this together, and as my career has progressed, me and my father's relationship has gotten worse. And I never thought that would be the case. And when people watched me fight on the Tuesday Night Contender, I kind of told them my story a little bit to let them know, you know, why I fought and how I got into fighting and what my goals were, you know. And my goal was to make that UFC walk. And after I did, you know, I thought maybe, you know, my father would reach back out to me. He'd want to know more questions, you know, maybe be curious to make that walk with me, you know. I never thought I'd make that walk without him. And I seen him on Easter Sunday, and after we had a conversation, it changed my output on life. It changed my output on family, and it changed my output on wanting to fight. And I realized I was fighting for all the wrong reasons. I was fighting to try to get my dad back, to get my dad's love, for my kids to know who my dad is. I got two kids. I got a 9-year-old and I got a 4-year-old. And they don't know who my father is. They see him occasionally, but they don't know my father. They know my mom. My mom comes out all the time. She still does. Even after I put my interviews out and did all that. And it came down to it. I didn't have the urge to train no more, and I was fighting for all the wrong reasons. I don't have to fight no more.
Absolutely. Man, I'll tell you what, after hearing that, man, if you're not on board and come 100% behind Jimmy the Brick on his retirement after that, man, you just don't have a heart. You know, you said it perfectly. Everything you said right there should have been taken to the heart by every fan of yours in the world, man. And, I salute you for that, brother.
Absolutely, man. And it's well, you know, like you're not, you're a little bit older than us, but you know, you're not old by any means. And to realize something like that, you know, at a young age that you were, you know, I've never been in your shoes in the fighting world like you were, and to get to the, you know, ultimately any fighter, you know, they want to be in the UFC, but for you to realize that, hey, you know, like I have happiness beyond this, you know what I'm saying? And for you to realize that and to call it quits when you're on top, you know what I'm saying? When you can go live your life and enjoy your life, man, like, that makes me happy as hell for you, man. You know, that's why, and that's why, you know, I started this with, you know, a lot of people, you know, ask you, why'd you retire? I just wanted to tell you congrats on the retirement, you know, because you obviously ultimately did what made you happy. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And what's going to be better in the future. And that's what people don't realize. I mean, it's not just the father thing and all that. It's, you know, like fighters don't have fallbacks. And I knew all that stuff going into it. But when I won the fight the way I did, all that did was set up to have to train harder, yeah, to have to do more, to do more. And what we make as fighters and what is not enough for me to give up my day job to pursue it 100% to pay for my family, to pay for my bills. If we don't fight, we don't get paid. If you get hurt, then how long's your injury going to be? You know, if you don't get hurt in the fight, the UFC don't pay for it. They only pay for it, you know, if you get hurt in the fight. And then everybody's like, well, you won $70,000. Well, yeah, because I won a $50,000 bonus. I mean, not every time. I'm not for sure if I'm going to win it every time. But the thing about it is, so I got 10 and 10. The next fight's only 12 and 12. Like, so I'm supposed to live off of hoping that I'm going to get 12 and 12. Not only am I going to win, nothing's going to happen. There's going to be no injuries. We're both going to make weight. We're going to fight. And then I'm going to get 24 grand. That don't count taxes and all that stuff. And then fighters got to pay taxes at the end of the year. We don't pay it right there out of our check, you know. They're not like, hey, Jimmy, you won 70,000. Now we're taking out, you know, which was 22,000. But $22,000, like, prefer them to take it right off the top, but that's not how it works, you know. And just with all that, the benefit thing, and then just having to train more and not having the excitement to want to do the sport no more is why I ended up making my decision. And a lot of people keep saying you're gonna regret it, or the money, or I never did it for fame, I never did it for money, and I'm not gonna regret spending more time with my kids. So like, I'm okay with my decision, and I watch the fights all the time. I'm always going to be a fan, and I enjoy it. I'm into the UFC trading cards now, so.
Seen that.
I can't wait to get my hands on one of them bad boys, too.
Boy, that Jimmy Flick one is fucking badass, too.
I got them, and, like, so we don't get paid for them, right? And some of these bigger fighters, they have auto cards where you get their card where it's already got the signature on it, you know. Well, I don't have one of those. So what I do control is what cards I do sign. So what I do is I buy my own cards, and I buy them and I sell them to fans that want them. And if I have to ship it to you, I have cards for $50, and then they have numbered cards. Like the red ones, there's only 275 of those in the world. So those are 75. And then there's blue ones. There's only 199 of those. So I'll sign those for 100. And it goes up to the rarer the cards are. But I have to pay for these cards and get them. I've already spent up to probably a couple hundred dollars on all my cards. But in my wife just laughed and said, more of that. but it's in hopes to get my signature out to some fans and some fans to buy the card, interact with me. I shipped one out to the United Kingdom. I'm shipping one out to Canada. I shipped one to Maine. So far, like 6 or 7 different states and to different countries. So that was pretty cool. And then I'm going to ship some out to New Zealand and Australia. Like, I have people hit me up from all over the world, and it's insane, and I love it, man.
You know, that's pretty awesome right there, man. You got people you got to ship overseas to now, brother.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, too, that you just shipped one to the United Kingdom, because on our podcast here, it gives us the analytics, you know, of how many listens we get and where they come from. And we got a couple listens from United Kingdom. So with you saying that, I'm wondering if somebody didn't see your name, you know, tagged onto our podcast and probably clicked on it from the first time you were on. And that's, I mean – hell, that's probably where our United Kingdom came from.
Spreading the love around the world,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, Jimmy Flick's big in the UK, man.
Yeah, so we're going to stick with that story. So, Jimmy, we appreciate that one.
Yeah, no shit.
So, Jimmy, one day I was late for work because I heard you on 97.5 KMOD. So I was pulling into work and I sat in my car and I listened to the whole spiel, dude. So what you had just explained to us about why you retired and what you were fighting for and then you know, the fact that Dana White, he's not going to take care of you if anything happens, man. I listened to that part on KMOD, dude, and I sat there and I felt every bit of that for you, bro. So to hear it again, straight from you that time, it was dope as hell. But, you know, they didn't even dock my pay because I told them what I was doing out in the parking lot and they were with it.
Heck yeah. That's awesome.
So, Jimmy, on the
yeah, I mean, look at Chris Weidman, dude. He snapped his leg. Like, Chris Weidman, he just snapped his leg. They paid for it and all. But in 10 years, if he's not on the UFC roster no more, you think they're going to take care of him?
No,
they're not.
Not enough.
Like, so, yeah, he has no fallback or nothing.
Right, yeah.
So, Jimmy, a quick hitter real quick, just to circle back to the cards, your trading cards. Are you when you bought them, are you buying them from the company or are you buying them from, like, people that already owned them? And if it was, you're shaking your head, yeah. So, did it help you at all on contacting them saying, hey, I am Jimmy Flick and I want to buy this card?
It backfired big time, actually, because they're like, yeah, because like they're like, the motherfucker wants his own card, so it's got to be worth something then, right?
Oh, man.
And so, like, right off the bat when I got into it, everything was on eBay, and then I shared a post that somebody tagged me in about a card being on eBay. And then when I did that, that was dumb because now I just fucking brought in people to bid me up on my own card, you know? So I didn't end up getting that card at that time, but I ended up learning how eBay worked over time and how to wait it out and get your bid in better and start winning more cards. But I did message a couple people, and when I told them, like, hey, my name's Jimmy Flick, I'm trying to buy the card, you know, and I was wondering if you'd work with me. 9 times out of 10, it didn't. But I had a buddy from New Zealand named Steven hit me up, and I was asking me for a card. Well, there's this card called Okta, and there's only 8 of them in the world. And the dude had it on eBay for $1,000. So I messaged him, but I didn't tell him it was me because what everybody else was doing. So I was just like, hey, man, will you do 150? And he was like, no, I'll do 500. And I was like, I'm not paying 500. So I let it be. Well, this guy named Steven messaged this guy and told him, he was like, hey, man, I know Jimmy. He's trying to get all of his cards and because you create something called a rainbow. And he was like, will you sell him the card and blah, blah, blah. He said he offered you 150. The guy sold it to me for $50 after that. So then it worked out. And then I started getting in these card groups and then start interacting with these collectors. And now it's got me more feedback. It's got people wanting to help me. And to combo, only one person could create a rainbow, and that's every edition. And then the reason only one person can do it is because you have to get the black one of one.
The one of one card.
And it's one of one. Yeah, it was listed on eBay, and the dude had it listed at $15,000. So,
holy shit.
Yeah, right? And the reason people are doing that now is because I'm retired and they want it just in case maybe I do come back or if like say my book sells, because my book's coming out in September. If it sells and happens to like one seller, then boom, my cards are really going to blow up. But I'm trying to get that 101, and we offered $1,000 and he turned down $1,000, but I finally got his phone number and I'm working on to see if he'll trade some stuff. You know, I got some signed stuff from other fighters. I'll sign some stuff for him. I'm going to try to see if he'll work with me. And if I do, I'll make the rainbow happen. That'd be super cool.
Yeah, for sure. And if that guy does listen to this episode, Hey, my guy, give Jimmy his black prism. Like, come on now. It's Jimmy Miguel, Flick. It's his own damn card.
His name's Miguel, and he's from Florida. That's all I know.
All right, Miguel. All right, do your boys a solid now, all right?
Yeah, we don't
care. Find this dude. I'm trying to get that black 101, man.
I was gonna ask you a question, but you already answered it. I figured, you know, as soon as you retired, like all your cards and merchandise stuff like that, it probably went up just because, you know, now you retired and people's like, oh shit, he's retired, so I can charge more for this shit.
Yeah, exactly. And like I have some people that they'll actually just I've had a few people, like one dude just sent me this card, and there's only 49 of these in the world. This is a till. And then they got the green, and this is a green one. There's only 75 of them. And, like, I always have them on me. There's a purple one. Like I said, I'm always willing and dealing still, you know. Right. So it's pretty cool deal, dude. I never thought I'd be on a UFC trading card or any kind of card, you know, to be honest, you know. And so and
yeah, that's just dope so as people hell, man. Know, it
does, yeah, it's super dope, but it doesn't excite me and make me want to come back and fight. You know, everybody keeps asking for that. Like, same thing about, oh, they got Venom gear. You want to come back and fight because they got Venom gear? Like, no, that's not going to, like, give me my spark back to want to fight, y'all. Like, I'm good with where I'm at in life. And I'm actually looking at possibly a career change with work. And I had an opportunity to come up, and they're willing to work with me. And so I might make a career change that – down the road, I'll make really good money and have a great fallback. So, I'm excited about that.
More power to you on that, man. I hope all that works out for you and your family, brother. One thing that you did mention that was one of the things I really wanted to ask you about because I'm super stoked about it. I know in September, you're going to have a book and it's going to tell about your life. So, you know, I know Sean Fisher and I know Josh Copeland. I asked those guys about you because, you know, I'm a big fan of yours. They know you. They said that you have been through some shit, my man. And are we going to get a lot of detail through on this book you're coming out with?
Oh, yeah. That's 100% the plan. My book starts when I was 6 years old. When I was 6 years old is the day that the cops came in and busted us for the first time, first of many. And, I had two older brothers. I had two older sisters. My oldest brother in the teens age. So like they pulled a gun out on him thinking he was an adult. So he started crying. So I remember him crying, and then they started walking us through the house. And as we're walking through the house, I'm only 6 years old. You know, I don't know why they're there. I don't know what's going on, but we have a door that goes out into the garage, and the door that goes out into the garage, there's some bullets. They're like gun shell bullets for gunshots. And I see them, and there's like 10 of them. And as a six-year-old, I'm like, holy crap, dude, they're going to find those bullets, and my dad and my mom's going to be in trouble, you know? And they never grabbed those bullets, you know? And when they never grabbed the bullets, I kind of thought, you know, like, okay, everything's all right. They didn't find what they were looking for is what I was guessing. Well, I didn't know that my parents had 30 pounds of weed. I didn't know my parents had coke. I didn't know they had guns and all that. And that's what happened. They got busted. And at 6 years old, nobody ever explained that to me. You know, we didn't go to DHS then because my grandma showed up. And then I remember little bits and pieces of stuff. And it took my dad a year before he ended up going to prison. And I just on and off, we've been busted throughout our whole life and dealing with cops and drugs and everything. And that's what the book's going to tell. And we even had a good time, like I said, with me and my dad and my brother. We used to all live and train together. That's what I did. At 17, I dropped out of school and moved to Corpus Christi, Texas, and started to train to be an MMA fighter. And that's where it took off. And then it kind of started going back south when they got back involved with drugs. But I kept pursuing my career, and I'll talk about it, how we tried to, you know, make things work again. And then they just kept failing and kept failing. And
you can always try so hard, you know. And then when I tried on the Tuesday night contender, that's why I told my story on the Tuesday night contender, hoping that was going to help. And it didn't help, you know. So I know where I'm at in life. So I know what I want to do in life and where I want to be. And that's what I'm pursuing.
Yeah.
And what's awesome. Go ahead, David.
Okay, yeah. So after, like, hearing that backstory and then hearing what you told us earlier about the retirement makes it make even more sense. Like, your decision makes perfect sense, you know. Yeah, it really brings everything together. I'm excited for the book to come out now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying, man. I can't wait until September, you know, whether it's going to be started in the making or if it's coming out. Either way,
it's coming out, baby. It's
hell yeah.
Like,
so what's the book called?
This book started actually after the Tuesday Night Contenders, when the publisher reached out to me. And I was like, yes, I would love to tell my story. And he was like, I've published over 1,000 books. One of my books is the number one seller. I think you got something here. And I was like, I would love to. I said, but I don't have an ending yet, you know. So I already know how to tell my story. I know what's happened. I'm putting it more on a timeline now, why it'll go in the book better. And we're already about to start the chapter process and all that. So we've been doing it for a while, and now I have an end.
Yeah, absolutely. Lost him for a second.
Yeah, I can't wait until September rolls around, man, because I'm gonna need a hardback copy of that bad boy.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the book called, Jimmy?
Jimmy, you're on mute, bro.
There we go. It took me out, brought me back in.
What's the book called?
It's called The Brick.
The Brick. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
So here's
a
question for you on your books and everything. I want to know from your perspective, which one's harder? Walking into an octagon trying to knock somebody the fuck out or write a book?
Knocking somebody out, it would be way easier, honestly.
Would be easier.
I don't write the book. I tell the book.
Yeah.
You know? So I have a writer, and I just – but it is hard. Like, what I'm saying is I got to put this stuff in a timeline now. So now I got to go all the way back, like, year for year to be able to get this keyed in, to be able to do the chapters right, to tell the story right. And then that's the whole point of the book, too, and more people will understand why I retired by the end of the book. And I plan on doing an audio book as well, and it will be me reading it and telling my story where people can hear the passion and the hurt that I went through growing up and the stuff I had to deal with. It wasn't easy. So, but the book, it'll be in Barnes & Noble. It'll be every major bookstore. It's going to be in Amazon or on Amazon. And we'll have a setup to where we'll have a pre-order setup to where you can get a signed copy. We'll have hard copies. We'll have paper copies. So, like I said, we're far, far, far. Far like on making this happen. Like, we've done a lot, so I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm fucking pumped for that.
Yeah. Just hearing a little tidbit makes you really want to read the whole fucking book.
Yeah, no shit.
So yeah, y'all just wait. Like I said, I had two older brothers, I had two older sisters, and I had a younger sister, but she was adopted before she was even born because we were so poor.
Damn.
Yeah, she knows us too. I mean, she knows that I'm her real brother. She knows my mom and dad was her real dad, and she knows the story. And there will be more story to that, and there will be a reason why people don't hear about her and don't understand why she's not in my life either, you know. And, like, none of us live a very good life. It's a tough life. And still to this day, if I get pulled over in my hometown, I get searched because of the fact that my last name's Flick, you know. And – that's just what comes with it, you know. It's been like that since I was 12 years old. So, and I, like you said, that's why I want to put it in a book. I want people to hear it and really know what I went through. But it's also to let kids know, like, whatever you're going through, if you got parents that ain't very wealthy or are tough or, you know, are involved in drugs, don't mean you have to, you know. Right. Like, and I want to go and mentor kids and take my book and tell my story and maybe sell out a crowd without having to punch or get punched.
That's the dream right there.
Yeah, man. Right? Yeah. So that's the beautiful thing about it, man. Going through that as a child and, you know, your back was against the wall your whole damn life. And stepping into a ring changed your life. And then, you know, you made it to the highest days that you could possibly do it and retire from there as well, man. That's, it doesn't get much better than that, man, in a story, bro.
Nah, it's everything I wanted to accomplish. I did. And now I got more goals to accomplish. And either way, man, I see myself working till I'm 60 regardless. And you know, like probably older. That people, them older people that are like 65, 70, they're like, yeah, just wait, you know?
I'm going to be retired by I'm your age. And they'll be like, yeah, wait till you get my age. Tell me your ass going to be retired.
Right. And when I tell people I'm retired, it's like, I'm not retired from work. Like, I'm just retired from getting beat up or beating people up.
Yeah. You know? There you go. So you mentioned a little bit a while ago, you know, you got the bonus for your fight and you had your pay from the actual fight as well. And that brings us into one of our listener questions. Shout out to Marlon Lewis, joined us last week, was our guest. He was an awesome guest and he commented or texted me today. And he was wondering just the fighter's pay, you know, because it's no secret to, you don't have to be in the UFC to understand that, you know, like the big names, the John Jones, the Conor McGregors, like those guys obviously, you know, draw on the pay-per-views and get the money. But, you know, for guys that aren't like that, he was wondering just if you could kind of give us a general basis of how the pay is. And then he was wondering if, you know, how the pay is that why you see a lot of fighters now converting to like the WWE? Is that, are they doing that to go make more money because they already have a fighting name so that they can work themselves into wrestling? Or if you could just kind of give your thoughts on that.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I'll let you know exactly how the pay goes. I mean, they put it out there for people to know. Like, everybody knows what I make. I even had some lady yell out at a convenience store, like, you really made $70,000? Like, when I walked in. I'm like, well, thanks, lady. Yeah. All right. Like, I'm not trying to fucking, like, just bring attention to me. And she just said that. But, and I say, like, people don't think about the taxes and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I signed a 4-fight contract. I'm still under that contract. If I want to come back, I can still fight. Your first fight is $10,000 to show, $10,000 to win. That doesn't count manager fees. That doesn't count anything. They give us per diem. You know, they pay for a little bit of food and stuff like that. Now, you get 3 corner men in a fight, right? They pay for one. Damn. One corner man is all they will pay. They pay for me and one corner man. If you want other corner men, you have to pay the flight there and back, even if it's in another country. And that doesn't matter.
And that's out of your camp's pocket.
Yeah. That's out of my pocket, you know. And and if you tell them, well, the easiest way to do it is like, well, go ahead and book all the flights at the same time. Y'all tell me what I owe you. And they take it out. They take it right out of my purse. And that's what they do. But they only pay for one cornerman and me. And then they give us per diem, not enough per diem for shit. Not me and my cornerman either. Because with the COVID, we had to order everything. We couldn't go nowhere. Yep. So you got to DoorDash everything. So everything's got fee. They gave me like $60 a day, I believe, know? But me and my coach order some food and get it DoorDash and everything. It's close to $60, you know? Yeah. And that's only one meal. So then they would take us to the food market though. And they would take us down there and go grocery shop. And we had a kitchen and everything. So you could do that, you know? But, like, you lose money even fighting, you know, with them. You know, they don't pay for everything. Right. So then if you win your fight, you go 12-12. If you win that fight, you go 14-14. You win that fight, you go 16-16. So put it this way. If I would have went 3-0 with 3 badass finishes, All right. Let's say I would have won. I beat Cody. I did beat Cody, so I don't want to say we would have. But say I would have beat Little Fig, all right? If I would have beat Little Fig, that would have gave me possibly a top 10 opponent, all right? And his brother wins the belt. Say I beat Little Fig in good fashion, and his big brother does not like that. Then I win my third fight, and let's say I fight somebody like Tim Elliott or Brandon Royval right there at like 6 or 7, or even Cara de France. If I fought one of them and I won in good fashion, that's 3 fights. I have 1 fight left on my contract. Well, now they want me to fight for a title. The champ wants me. But you're only making 16 and 60. Because there's no renegotiating. Wow. Now, yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. The chances are slim. It'd be very slim for me to make that happen. But even if I won 4 fights, I got my 16 and 16, they're going to renegotiate contract. The hopes would be able to get maybe 20 and 20, and then 22 and 22, 24 and 24. And then that's what happens with John Bones Jones and them. They end up signing what, like 8, 9 fight contracts?
Yeah.
Based on a certain amount of money. Well, over 4 years, the money he's getting, some other fighters are getting that now because the money has been raised. The stake has been raised. They have managers that are getting them better money, getting them better offers. But for a guy like me, I'm at the bottom of the totem pole. I won the contract for the Tuesday Night Contender. That's a 4-deal contract. That's all you get. Like Brandon Royval, if he had the same contract as me, his first fight was Tim Elliott. If he had the same contract as me, that's 10 and 10. He fought a ranked opponent, got 20 grand, ended up getting the bonus. Then he fought Cara de France. Probably not saying his name right, but it sounds good. So he fought that guy. He ended up getting another $50,000 and fight of the night, won that fight. So now he's at 14 and 14. And he's fighting Brandon Morono. That's fighting for the title. Right. If he would beat Brandon Morono, he would have got the title shot only going into his 4th fight. And they're like, oh, you're making history. You've done it the fastest. But you're under contract and you're getting 16 and 16. And we fucking love it. And we don't care. Like, that's kind of, you know, that's the things that they deal with, the things that we have to deal with. And you got to try to get all the way to that level. Then they took sponsorship away. I waited to say this. That's why fighters are going to WWE. They're going to Bellator. Like, we got top fighters going to Bellator, leaving their contract from the UFC when they could still fight in the UFC. But they want to go there because you got endorsements. UFC took our endorsements away. I got $3,500 from Reebok. I have one sponsor that pays me more money than that just to post them on social media, to put them on my own shirts that I make. Right. And I can't even say that. I can't even say their name on national television. And they give me more than the Reebok gear I wore out or the Venom gear I would have wore out. And then I have 20 other sponsors that gave me money that added up to over what they gave me to help me to be able to work less and do all that. And that's why fighters move to Bellator. That's why they're going to bare knuckle. I mean, you got Paige VanZant. Should never, ever in her life be in bare knuckle. Right. But she's making millions, probably. She's going to make more than the UFC would have ever gave her. And that's what these fighters are doing now. They're, like, realizing, like, if I'm going to keep fighting, I want to make the most money. Why, when I do retire, I got money. And a lot of fighters don't. I mean, look at Anderson Silva. I mean, he's about to box again. I don't know if it's because of money or whatever, but he's about to box again. You know, they're always looking for another payday. Sure. You had Chuck Liddell come back and lose to Tito Ortiz for a payday that he should have never done, you know? And then now you got Jake Paul just pissing all over the UFC. And I used to hate Jake Paul, dude. I used to hate him, dude. And now I like that guy. I actually wish that guy would have been my manager, you know? Because I wouldn't have been retiring at 30 years old.
Yeah.
And that's how it works, man. If you got the right manager, you got the right stuff, you can make this shit work. But not everybody's Conor McGregor or even wants to be Conor McGregor or have to do what you have to do from the shit talking and everything like that to be the Conor. You can't just, like Diaz said, like look at fucking Diaz, man. He's still been getting shit on and people fucking love him, but he deals with it because he loves the fight and he's finally starting to get paid more money, dude. And it should have happened a long time ago.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a crazy motherfucker right there. Anybody, anytime, anywhere, the Diaz brothers are ready to go.
What's crazy to me from hearing that just is how bad they nickel and dime you with these contracts. Like you said, you can fight for a title for $16,000.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
That's, yeah.
When you said that, that's where my head went first. You know, like you were saying, you know, if you won your first three fights and then that fourth one, you had a title fight, you can't turn down a title fight. Like, you can't tell the UFC, no, I'm going to fight one more fight for this contract to be over, then I'll fight for the title, because then that title shot's going to be gone.
Yeah.
You got to take it when you can get it.
Exactly. And I forgot who it was. Oh, yeah. No, I did not forget who it was. And you can Google it. This is a fact. All right. Sage Northcutt was making more money than TJ Dillashaw when TJ Dillashaw fought for the title. I believe he got $50,000 to show, $50,000 to win. Fucking Sage Northcutt had flat pay of $100,000.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he's a pretty boy. He's marketable. He had the kickboxing background, and he had a manager that knew what the fuck he was doing. You want this pretty boy to come into the UFC undefeated? We're getting this kind of money, and this is the money we want. And you can market him the whatever way you want to market him, you know, or in Diego's way, you know, the narrative. So, you know, like, and it's true, man. They can paint the narrative however they want to. And, like, when I went to the Ultimate Fighter, I was on the Ultimate Fighter season 18 as a alternate. They paid me $750 to show up to make weight, and if anybody missed weight, I got to step in. Apparently, it's the only fucking season nobody missed weight. So, and damn. Ronda Rousey and Miesha Tate were the coaches. But my contract was that thick, man. To read it, me and my wife stayed up all night reading this contract because we had to sign it and stuff. And you couldn't say nothing. They could sue you up to $5 million if I had mentioned it to anybody. So, but when I go back and I'm telling my training partners, or, you know, they're going to know some, well, they got to sign themselves a waiver to say that they're not going to say nothing if they link anything back to them, that they could be sued for fucking $5 million.
What the
fuck? Like, it's crazy, the shit. Like, I mean, they're smart. That's why they sold for a fucking billion something dollars, you know?
Yeah.
It's because they're a billion-dollar industry. They know what they're doing, and they have – and what I like to tell people – they have the best fine print in the world. That's it. You know, their fine print will fucking take care of them, and nobody will understand their fine print like the way they understand their fine print.
Right. And what David just said, that how he found it crazy that they nickel and dime those contracts that. And then I go back to the first time that you were on our podcast, you know, I asked one of my questions I have for you that night was, we got the Adam Saia fight coming up this weekend. You know, I said, you know, do you get that fight? And you were like, hell no. Like, you got to pay for the fight. You know, even when you were contracted under the UFC, which is crazy that, you know, like he said, they nickel and dime you like that on the contract. You still got to pay for the fight because the UFC ain't being nickel and dimed at all. They're rich motherfuckers. Like, they're making their money.
Just bleeding their fighters dry, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Exactly, man. Con artists.
Fucking money hand over fist off pay-per-view and merchandise and shit like that, and they have sponsors, and then they're just bleeding their fighters dry, covering your own expenses, your own corner men. Like, that is ridiculous to me.
Yeah, that's fucking wild.
Absolutely.
So, and
I don't know why. That's the second time it just took me out.
You're good, man. We were just saying that it's crazy that the UFC nickel and dimes their fighters when they're not being nickel and dimed at all, because the UFC is making their fucking money.
Yeah, and another thing is, like, so, like, on the food thing, like, they give us money for per diem. Well, they also offer the fighters food, right? You know, through, like, a meal prep. And that was badass, you know? But the UFC ain't paying for that. The fucking people are giving us that food to get promoted as a sponsor in the UFC.
Yeah.
Where we could get a meal prep sponsor, be able to promote them and get paid by them. But no, that's out the window as well. You know, they offer cool things. Don't get me wrong. We got all kinds of cool gear, get swag, get all that, blah, blah, blah. But I would rather make it myself to make my own banner. That stuff was so cool when I watch fighters come out. They have it lets you know what fighter's which, you know, who they are, you know, and stuff like that. And it took a lot away from fighters, you know. That's why you said WWE. We got Matt Riddle. If y'all remember Matt Riddle, he's over there in that WWE, dude. He does some good stuff, man. He's probably the only UFC fighter that I've actually followed that went to WWE.
Yeah. And that's from shout out again, Marlon, for the listener question for Jimmy on that one. And everything just makes more sense.
Yeah.
As you keep talking to us, everything's just making more sense. And so we have one more listener question for you, Jimmy. And you brought up Diaz, you know, and then I said, you know, the Adam Saia fight is the main event this weekend. And shout out to Giuliano Barson. He's given us a couple questions for a couple weeks. So we appreciate Giuliano again for the questions. And his is, you know, just if you can get into this weekend, you know, what do you think is going to happen? Who you got? Kind of break it down for us from a fighter's perspective.
All right. Dude, I hope a lot of people listen to this because I did an interview like a day or two ago. And my picks have changed now on one fight.
Oh, nice.
And I was
seen that.
So
main event is Adesanya. Adesanya and Marvin. I fought on the card. Well, I didn't get to fight because he had pink eye, but I was supposed to fight with Marvin. He was the main event against Jack Hermanson when I was supposed to make my UFC debut. Just in person, it just does not seem like a good guy. And he always seems mean, mad. I didn't really get to talk to him or nothing. But so I don't know much about Marvin, but I like Izzy. I've never met him in person. But I think Izzy's gotten better over the time since they fought. I was very disappointed in Marvin's fight against Kevin Holland. There is a way to beat Kevin Holland. There's a way that you should be able to finish Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland came in on a week's notice after getting his ass beat and a fucking just ragdolled. And you had the game plan with a full fight camp, and you couldn't do it, man. And he didn't even get close to it, you know. And that kind of disappointed me. And Adesanya, everybody's like, he lost the jump to Yan. But he didn't get murdered by Yan. Like,
yeah, he was fighting way up.
Yeah, I mean, Yan, I don't even think mounted the guy, you know. Like, I think the best position he got was half guard. I don't even think he got the side mount, you know. Nothing, you know. So, he didn't do nothing special. And so, I think Adesanya sleeps him in the first round. I want to knock him out with that left punch, just that little, like, dip back straight left hand, man. And I'd like to see him face plant him, you know. So,
and
that's what I'm hoping for.
Just from my perspective looking at it, too, you know, you just brought up the Adesanya and Yan fight. Like, he went up in class, you know. It was apparent. You watch that fight, you know, he really didn't have business being in the ring with him because he was overmatched by size.
He's
what I mean?
He's too big and strong, man.
But Adesanya, to me, he was starting to get that I guess I can call it that Conor McGregor, you know, swag to him that, you know, he was getting a little big-headed. And, you know, he went up to see what would happen. He went up, and it didn't turn out well for him, you know. So, I personally think that Yan fight, you know, it was – hopefully it was humbling to him, you know what I'm saying? Because in his weight class, he is great in his weight class. He can run that weight class, and he can beat the fuck out of anybody that comes and fights him. So, hopefully, you know, that kind of humbled him a little bit. He gets back to what he's good at, and I agree with you. I think it'll be a quick one. You know, I don't see it going very long at all. Like one, two rounds, maybe. I think Adesanya finishes him.
Oh yeah,
I think Adesanya is right where he needs to be now, man.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you come off a loss. You know what I mean? Like, kind of brings you back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah. And he didn't do that fight. It wasn't like a money fight. It wasn't the Conor McGregor, you know, fucking fight, you know, like where you get a shitload of money. He did it to try to become a double champ to create more money. Right. You know, now that you lost that fight, it's not like – and you didn't make a shitload of money, it better motivate your ass. Right. You know, like, you know what you need to work on, and you know what your opponent's going to do. They're going to come in, and all they're going to do is try to get you to the ground. And – The only person I think that can beat Adesanya is Rob Whittaker. I think Rob Whittaker has better wrestling, better pressure, and he didn't try that in the first round or the first fight. So I think the next time they fight, if he uses his wrestling, Rob Whittaker is the person that I think that can beat Adesanya.
I like the hell out of that take right there, man. Yeah. If Whittaker can take him down and keep him down, well, that's a done deal right there. Whether it goes to decision or not, he'll control the ring, and I think that's going to get him the dub.
Yeah, and he did it to Kevin Gastelum. Kevin Gastelum's got a little wrestling experience, you know, and I think he underestimated Adesanya's striking in that first fight, and he had a lot of stuff going on with his family and his kid and everything he went through. So I think when he gets this chance again, especially coming off back-to-back five-round fights, he's going to be able to push the pace, and he's going to know what he needs to do, and I think he can win that fight.
I'm right there with you on that one. So let's do Big Fig versus Moreno. What do you think about this one?
All right. This is the one I was talking about. All right. So a lot of people are not looking into the fact of why the first fight went the way it went. The way the fight went the first time was because they both fought 3 weeks after they won a fight. So they didn't train for each other. They were literally right back to keeping their cardio up, cutting weight, and just going out there and fighting. So Figgy, he's a big guy. They say he gets like 165, like me. I'm a big 125er. Not a big 35er, but a big 25er. And they say he gets up to 165 pounds. Well, we know after the weigh-ins, he had a hard time. They said he went to the hospital. They never released whether he got an IV or not, you know, because we're not allowed to get IV. So I'm curious if he did, but they never released it, because if he did, he was supposed to get suspended. But he ended up fighting anyway, and the fight went to a decision or a draw. But also the draw happened because he hit homeboy in the nuts twice, all right? So with all that, I have Figgy winning the fight. Second round knockout until they had the press conference and they were standing there, and Brandon's just him smiling, happy, being Brandon. And Figgy just pushes him. And that just tells me one thing. He's got too much rage. And when a guy like that has too much rage, he's going to come in and he's going to try to knock him out with everything he got for the first two rounds. And if he does not knock Brandon out, he will gas way harder than he did in the last fight because there was no fans. There's going to be fans this time. They're a fight for the title. It's a rematch. He feels like he's got something to prove, and he's got so much fucking anger for no reason. And when I seen him push and then at the press conference how he was talking, like, it changed my perspective. I think he's going to gas out and get submitted in the fourth round now.
You got like very it. Insightful takes. Like, yeah. Because you understand everything that goes into it. So it's like, Zach, who do you think wins this fight? I got Izzy. His shit is so insightful. You know right. what I mean? It's refreshing to hear it, you know?
So let's move on to that Diaz fight, because you – love or hate Diaz, you got to respect the fuck out of what the Diaz brothers are about, because like I just said a while ago, anyone, anywhere, anytime, they're ready to fight. Like, it doesn't matter. So what's your takes on Nate Diaz returning back to the Octagon this week?
Stockton.
Yeah, you know he's Stockton.
Slapping. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hang on, yeah, I don't know. My phone is like all messed up now.
We can hear you.
Speaking.
Yeah, we got
audio. All right, well, I can't see nothing. But as long as you got audio, that's good. Yeah, so good. On this fight, man, I love Diaz. Diaz is my boy, man, and I want him to win so bad. But I don't see it happening. Diaz does not perform the way he usually performs at welterweight like he does lightweight. And that's what scares me fighting Leon Edwards. Leon is – he's very technical. He's smart. He's like a Kamaru Usman without the really good wrestling, you know. And I think he's going to point fight him. I think y'all are going to be very disappointed when we see a five-round clinch fight. Leon Edwards just beating him by points. There's a reason Leon Edwards has not got a title fight after 8 fights. There's a reason they don't push him half the time. There's a reason he ended up with a guy like Muhammad last fight, you know, and not a top guy. And Jorge ain't going to fight him, and that was his only shot to try to make something happen. Besides the little incident with Jorge, you can't really tell me anything about Leon Edwards. You know, nobody.
I feel exactly what you're saying with, and I hate to say it because I'm a Diaz fan. I think Leon Edwards is going to come out and dominate Nate. The dude, I mean, he's number 3 in welterweight. He hasn't been beaten in 9 fights, so he's on a fucking high right now. And he has every advantage, you know, with the exception of his submissions, dude. I just say he's going to point him to death as well, man. So I feel everything you just said.
Well, yeah, and the thing about the submission thing is, though, is Diaz, he's got the worst wrestling in either the welterweight or the lightweight division. Doesn't matter what division's in, he's in. He has no wrestling, and he never has, and that's always been his weakness. The only reason he got Connor and submitted Connor is Connor's dumbass gassed out and shot in. And he sprawled. He took his back.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the only reason he submitted Connor, you know. And that didn't happen in the next fight. And then he fought Jorge Masvidal. Jorge's too big. He can't get him down, you know. And, like, I would have preferred to see him, like, Diaz fight Cowboy, you know. I think he's already beat him, though, once. So, yeah, that's probably why I didn't do that. I think he did beat Cowboy. But, like, fights like that are perfect for him. Like, the Michael Johnson fight. Like, that's when you see the best Cowboy, you know. When they stylistically match him up a lot better. And people don't want to take him down, but their striking's not at his level. Well, Leon's not going to take him down. But Leon's got good striking. He's not going to box with him. He's going to kick with him, and I think he's going to clinch up. He's going to win another boring 5-round fight, and he's still not going to earn a title shot. I mean, it's what I see happening.
So, Jimmy, just to backtrack a little bit on what you said, because I was going to ask you about it since we're talking about Diaz. Diaz's last fight was that Masvidal fight, and I just want your opinion on this because – me, Chance, and David, you know, we all watched it together. You know, anytime you get Street Dejus and Diaz, you know, that's – I mean, that sells itself. You know, like, you know, you're going to see some kind of fireworks. But for the refs to call that one because Diaz was bleeding, like, did you think it was bullshit that – how we thought it was bullshit? Because if any – you watch any Diaz fight, I mean, I can flick Diaz above his eyebrow and there's so much scar tissue, he's bleeding. Wait, this is that's what the Diaz brothers do. They bleed. So we thought it was bullshit that it got called on the blood, but okay, you kind of break that one down for us if you thought it was bullshit or you think they made the right call.
Oh no, it's 100% bullshit, like you said, because he bleeds like crazy. There's even a meme going around, I don't know if you've seen it, and it's a picture of Diaz covered in blood, and it says after Leon throws the first feint. Just a faint. You know? Just literally saying, like, Diaz bleeds so fucking easy. It doesn't matter, you know? But the thing about that is, that's where it comes down to commissions. I can tell you right now, Diaz not fighting in Houston, he was never fighting in Houston. I think that was a gig to sell tickets because they didn't think Michael Chandler and Charles Oliveira was going to be able to do it. But when it sold out as fast as they did, they were able to get a reason to get Diaz off that card. You think Diaz is going to fight Houston, Texas, the worst commission for medical marijuana? Not happening, y'all. It is not happening.
Yeah, that's – when we watched it and we watched the ref come out and look at Nate, and, you know, we were like, okay, you know, that's his job. He's got to come out and look at it, you know, but – everybody in the fucking world knows that Diaz bleeds. That's just what it is. And then when he called it, like, we were all like, what in the fuck are they doing? Like, I mean, I feel like the Connor fight that he won, he was bleeding way more than what he was in the Street Jesus fight, because that's just what Diaz does. He will cover an octagon in blood.
Yeah, and that, I mean, the meme about the faint it's fucking hilarious because of how true it is.
Yeah.
Like, this dude is a stuck pig no matter what. Like, fucking, you could take this guy down and he's losing, bro. It's bad.
Yeah, so I got Leon Edwards winning. I don't think it's going to be exciting. And but I want Diaz to win. I hope Diaz boxes him up, turns it into a war. But I just don't see it happen.
Yeah.
Jimmy, if you got the time, I'd like to get into one more, and that's the Bilal Muhammad versus Damian Maya. This one ought to be pretty cool to see in my book anyway. What do you think about this one?
I have a down to a T on my prediction on this one. So on this one, I think Bilal Muhammad, he's got to show something, you know. He wanted to fight Leon Edwards. He got poked in the eye. So now he's got to come out here. He's fighting on the same card on a pay-per-view, and he's got to make a statement. I think he's going to try, and he's going to do really good for the first two rounds. And he's going to have Damian hurt. He's probably going to have Damian bleeding. And I think in the third round, Damian Maya will get that one takedown. And Damian Maya will get that submission in the third round. Bilal, he gasses after a while. I think he's going to come in hard. He's going to try to finish. And fans are back. That's going to motivate. They're going to yell. The crowd's going to be loud. You're going to keep trying to finish. And that's how you blow your wads quicker. And I think that's what's going to happen. I think Damian's going to get that submission.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, Damian's super crispy on the ground. And if you run out of gas, you're in fucking deep water with a guy like that, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's just that simple.
There's a lot of people out there saying that 43-year-old Damian Maya ain't got what it takes to be quick enough to take down Muhammad. But that's a far cry, though. We'll see how that goes.
And it's one thing I want to touch on real quick from what Jimmy said too is just of how fucking great of athletes people like Jimmy are and these fighters that do it. You know, he's saying, you know, gasses out quick, you know, in like third round. Like, bro, I got this bag behind me. If I punch that bag for fucking 13 seconds, boy, I need about 45 minutes on the couch. Like, it's fucking – it's dumb. Like, you know, if – For people that haven't fought, you know, like none of us, you know, are professional fighters, but you know, we all got bags, you know, we'll do some stuff hitting a bag and everything. Like, it is crazy, and it's crazy how fast you will gas out. Like, if you do not condition your body to do what people like Jimmy does, like, yeah. it's unreal. But Jimmy,
hey man, it's tough, dude. Yeah, you can gas out and be in the best shape of your life too. The crowd, the adrenaline dumps. And that's what people don't understand. You know, you never know what adrenaline dump's gonna do to you.
Yeah, yeah. It's you're a different breed.
Different breed, man.
You're a different breed than a lot of people. But Jimmy, man, we'll let you go. We ain't trying to keep you all night, man. We know you're a busy man. Again, congrats on the retirement. And we're so grateful that you know you came back on with us the second time. You didn't have to come on with us first time. You know what I'm saying? You came on with the first time. You came back on with us again. You know, let us ask the questions that you know you've already been asked 3,000 times. And you know, you are a true professional. You know, came back on and you know, without a blink of an eye, you know, you answered the questions that we asked you. That, like I said, everybody's already asked you fucking a million times. So we're forever grateful for it, man. Myself, I know Chance and David feel the same. But we wish nothing but the best for you. We can't wait for the book to come out in September. I know I'm going to buy it. Whatever you do in life, brother, you got all three of us in your corner.
That's no doubt, brother.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate y'all, man. I really do. I appreciate the support. And, yeah, I'll keep everybody updated on the book. And if anybody wants to follow me on Instagram at TheBrickMMA. You want to follow me on Facebook? My personal Facebook is out of friend request. So I just try to get everybody to go to my fan page, Jimmy the Brick Flick. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Jimmy Flick. I'm active on all of them. I'm not on Snapchat. Sorry, y'all. I don't like Snapchat. So, but I'm on all three of those social media accounts. I appreciate all the support. And we'll have more info on the book soon. And I'll just be dropping all the info. And I appreciate all the support.
Absolutely, man.
Yes, sir. It was a pleasure, Jimmy.
We appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Yep. Y'all have a good one.
Take care.
Man, what a fucking guest.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Hey, that's one of the most humble dudes and just straight up, you know, like real people you're going to meet and get to kick it with like that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a super genuine guy. And I mean, fuck, dude, you can't pay for better insight into the UFC than that. Like, no, Jesus
Christ. That was good, dude. Hey, yeah, like, and you know what? What's crazy is he's like the Tony Romo of predictions, man. He's probably going to knock them all out.
And that's what David just said, right? You don't get that shit anywhere else.
No.
You know what I'm saying? I'll flash it back, Chance, when you and I had the pleasure of having Fulmer on. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Fulmer and Kosho, like, those guys are telling us information that, bro, you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's shit that the public knows, and then there's shit that the guys know that are actually doing.
Right, and that's why during that segment, like, I tried to just keep quiet and soak it up because he's the subject matter expert on everything that comes to fighting in general. Like, and shout out to Marlon for asking that excellent question about the pay. That was super insightful and helps you understand why a guy like that who's, you know, riding a high to the top makes a decision like he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sounded like it was the damn right decision. I mean, you got to be behind that dude 100% on that. And if you don't, you're kind of a piece of shit. And you know, to go in further into what he said about the UFC and how much they do not take care of their fighters like that is unreal, because they are a multi-billion-dollar fucking industry. I don't see how you can't just take care of the people that you bring in to beat the shit out of each other.
But this is just my honest opinion on it. I think it's because, you know, they obviously have a bottom line of what the UFC, what they want to make, you know, because, I mean, Dana White's probably a greedy motherfucker.
It's all about everything's, you know, about profit.
He wants to be that fucking billionaire, you know what I'm saying? But when they pay people like Jon Jones and Conor McGregor what they do, then that takes away from, you know, people like Jimmy, who'd only had one fight in the UFC and, you know, trying to make a name for himself to get up there to that level. But they just can't they can't afford it. I don't want to say I can't. They can't. They definitely can. They just won't, which is fucking bullshit.
You have to think about it like this, though. Like, there's so many people who try to make it there that if you turn down your 4, 6, 8, 10 contract, then guess what? The guy behind you will take it because he wants to fight in the UFC too. It's not like the NFL with 32 teams with 60 dudes, you know, on every roster in a practice squad. It's you. And there's only so many cats per weight class that get to be, you know, on the UFC roster. And if you don't want to fucking take their hardball, then go somewhere the fuck else then.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're in a position, they have all the leverage when it comes to those contracts. So it's unfortunate, but it makes sense why they do cats like that. Because what, you can go to the other UFC? Yeah. The fuck are you going to do about it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And what you just said, Chance, you'll vouch for me on this one, dude. If there was a 40th round pick in the MLB draft, and they were like, hey, we want to sign you for X amount of dollars, and this 40th rounder was like, no, I want $500,000. And they're like, fuck no. If they would have called me, I'd be like, bro, give me a plane ticket.
Yeah.
You ain't got a damn thing.
Do I get a jersey?
Yeah.
And I get to go to all the games? Cool, I'm in.
You ain't got to pay me a damn thing. You get me there, and we'll be good to go.
Wait, but my contract says I'm signing for a bag of Funyuns and a Gatorade? Shit, count me in, bro.
Free sunflower seeds, bro.
Just make sure it ain't a red Gatorade, and I'm good to go.
Shit. Man. Hey, but that is one busy-ass dude, to tell you, because I follow him on everything. He's either doing YouTube videos, talking on the radio, or eight different fucking podcasts, man. And to get him back on here, as busy as that dude is fucking awesome. And shout out to Jimmy again for stepping up to us, man, and stepping on and getting on with us, because – I didn't think we was going to be able to do it again. He's so dang busy.
Yeah, you know that's, I was worried about it too, because, you know, that first episode when we had him on, you know, we only had him on for a little short stint. And the plan was, you know, he was going to have his next fight. And then after that calmed down, you know, he was going to come back on with us. But then when he retired, every fucking body wanted to talk to him. So, you know, I was like, fuck, man, you know. You know, we're a podcast trying to grow. You know what I mean? He's got people like fucking ESPN, you know, all this shit wanting to talk to him. I was like, you know, we're going to get lost in the weeds, but it just, it shows the true character of that, of how he is, you know, and how down to earth he is, and how, and how cool he was. Like, for our listeners out there, like, this, if you listen to the first episode and this episode, like that dude, he just came on and joined us and talked to us like
we know,
like we were all in the same room just kicking it together.
Yeah, straight up.
One guy, bro, and you can tell, and a dude like that doesn't have to give three fucking nobodies the time of day.
Yeah.
And that tells you what kind of guy he is, like, to come on our podcast and drop some fucking fresh hot off the presses takes with us, you know what I mean? Like, he's a really good dude.
Hey, and on top of that, the dude's dude's undefeated in the UFC. Come on.
Yeah, ain't been beat. And David, what you just said, hot off the presses takes, he told us on here, well, I changed my picks. Bro, those fights are tomorrow. He probably ain't doing another interview. Balls Deep got the latest, greatest Jimmy Flick predictions for tomorrow's fights.
Exclusive.
Hell yeah.
Well, we're going to start charging you motherfuckers for this information. but, man, it was a fucking great episode again. I had a fucking blast. Chance, glad that you're back this week.
Hell yeah.
I missed the fuck out of you last week, but we got you back now.
Sorry, man.
We ran a little winded with Jimmy, so we'll save our topics for next week. For our listeners out there, we got you on the College Softball World Series. Boomer fucking Sooner.
Hey.
5 natties for Patty. So we'll talk about that next week. The Julio Jones stuff, we'll talk about that. You know, we talked about Julio for a couple weeks in a row, so now that he's to the Titans, we'll give our kind of takes on that. And then our last topic that we are going to get into today that we'll push back, and I think we'll all have some strong feelings on that, and that's the college football playoff. They're meeting next week to push it to 12 games. I won't even say a word about it right now because I'll get on a rant, and we'll go for another 30 minutes. So.
At least, an hour more like you.
So we'll save that one for next week, and we'll hit all three of those topics. Maybe have a guest, maybe not. We'll let you guys know. I know we got people lined up, but sometimes it's nice, you know, when we get a string of guests on, sometimes it's nice just for the three of us to hit an episode, get a little, hit the refresh button, and then get back at it.
It's really organic when we do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man, which is the whole fucking point of all this shit. It's just fun.
The thing of it is, like, if we got people lined up, you know, that want to come on, and I want every fucking one of them on. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I think they're going to be great episodes. But, you know, especially at this time, topics are scarce. College football rolls around, like, we'll have all the shit in the world to talk about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But if you guys are good, let's wrap it up there. Y'all got anything else?
Nah, man, just keep
it good, man.
We ain't ignoring anybody. Great episode with Jimmy today, so thanks for listening.
Absolutely. It's been a fun one. This has been episode 16. Boys, we're creeping up there. We're getting up there in episodes. I think we're very close, if we haven't hit it, the 1,000 play threshold. So, hey, growing a little bit by a little bit every week. You guys keep listening, share us, comment your questions. We love your questions. We'll shout you guys out. I'm your co-host, Zach Wunderlich, as always, joined by co-host Chance Rich and David Burgess. Chance, David, I appreciate the fuck out of you boys.
Always, brother, always.
Yep, it's a pleasure.
Absolutely. We'll holler at y'all next week. Again, this has been Balls Deep.